How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Brian Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, indeed. This morning, I am joined by, from the University of Minnesota, get my prepositions straight here, on the Smart Garden Show, Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I hope you are as well. It is still another chilly morning below average. We don't say normal anymore because there's no such thing. We're dealing with it, and I presume our plants and shrubs and lawns are dealing with it just fine.
Yeah, so we've been fortunate to have a fairly good snow cover, and that adds a lot of insulation to the roots of plants. And hopefully people have been fencing their plants, have fenced them against critters browsing on them. But, you know, it's important to look at the landscape and think about the winter interest that's out there and what these plants bring in this cold season when we have a lot of white and gray and brown, and what things like the colors of the stems and the flower heads. I just wrote an article in our Yard and Garden News on winter interest in plants that might be of interest to people. It's kind of giving you a few features of plants to think about as you go to your nurseries and your garden centers this summer and pick out new plants for your yard. So that's on Yard and Garden News on our extension site.
I want to ask you about the website again, especially for our newer listeners. But I should mention, too, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie, you can either call it in or text it in. We have one number for either, 651-461-9226. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know we really get busy here in this hour. So don't wait. We'd love to hear from you. Again, either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. And again, for maybe newer listeners or folks that have not checked it out yet, that extension.umn.edu website, I mean, you and your colleagues put so much work into this, but there's so much information there. You could get in there and read for hours.
Yeah, definitely the rabbit hole effect.
Yeah.
But we try to, we cover a lot of things. There's so much to cover in Minnesota gardening. We have 4 distinct seasons. We have trees and shrubs, information, flowers, annual flowers, perennial flowers. We have good information on your soil, which, of course, everybody knows is the foundation of your garden. And healthy soil is important to any plant health. We have good information on pollinators, too, and growing plants for pollinators, watering your trees as we start to get into our tree planting season this spring. It's important to remember to water your trees and to water them sufficiently. So there's tons of information. And if you don't get your questions answered on this radio show, you can always ask a Master Gardener. And we've got Master Gardener volunteers who are waiting to field questions on Ask a Master Gardener. So, yeah, lots of information.
Check it out, extension.umn.edu. I love comments like this. This has nothing to do with gardening, but just got this a bit ago. A listener who's listened to us for a long time. I'm just going to read it. They gave me their age. And it says, I've been listening to this station since I was around 16 in the sheep barn back in South Dakota.
Oh, wow.
I put on my earbuds when I get here to work at 2:30 in the morning. They don't come off until I leave at 2 p.m. Love it. Now, there's
awesome.
A staunch CCO listener.
Yeah.
So thank
Long
you for
time.
That.
That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. But here's another one that's related to the show. Is this a good time to prune an oak tree?
It is a good time to prune an oak tree. Right now, our oaks are dormant. This is a low to no risk time for pruning for oak wilt. Oak wilt transfers through root grafts of trees, of the oak trees, also through insects. And So this is a great time to prune. Another good reason, I mean, aside from the fact that it's not dangerous for oak wilt, is also you can see the structure of the plant. And so it makes it a little bit easier to choose and prune the right branches than when the plants have leaves on them. So this is, but definitely, yes, you can prune your oaks now.
Julie, as you know, once in a while when we get questions about pruning trees, whatever variety, and we get people to say, should I put something on that wound? Should I put, you know, should I cover up that cut with some? What I don't know what it's called, but I mean, what do you usually recommend in situations like that?
Well, wound paint, which can be latex paint. It can be a product that's specified for that. It can be a shellac. Those are all things that are used only in the only if you have to prune during a more risky time of year for a plant, a time of year when the, for example, if we had a summer storm in, you know, June, May or June, and a big branch of your oak tree broke off, then we would recommend using a wound paint on it because that is a high risk time for oak wilt. But other than that, we really don't recommend that wound paint just because the tree actually, if it's pruned correctly, it will heal itself very easily. And the wound paint hasn't proven to give any benefit except in the case of protecting the tree from infection. So you can always contact a certified arborist. And in fact, as you're looking at your trees and shrubs and wondering about, you know, boy, is this a task I really want to take on? A certified arborist is a great investment for any homeowner with major trees and shrubs to prune.
And as we said quite often on this show, Julie, that we're so lucky in this area to have so many great arborists.
Yes, and we have a great
Julie, that we have, we're so lucky in this area to have so many great arborists.
Yes, and we have a great webpage on our extension site called How to Hire a Tree Care Professional. And it gives you not only good questions to ask and background and information, but it also gives you the link to the International Society of Arboriculture, where you can enter in your zip code and find a certified arborist in your area.
Just like that. All right.
That's right.
As we head to this quick break, Julie, let's invite our listeners to join in. If you would like to chat with Julie, call in your question, your lawn or garden question, or send a text like other folks are doing as well. 651-461-9226. That's the only number you need to remember for your phone calls or texts here on our Smart Garden Show. On this Saturday, News Talk 830 WCCO, it's 8 degrees above zero, going for 27. We hope to hear your lawn and garden questions this hour. It's called Smart Garden. We are here on CCO Radio every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. You can call in your question or send a text, either one, 651-461-9226. Here's another one for you, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Is there anything I can work into my soil early in the spring that will help to rid my rhubarb of slugs and my hostas, too?
Oh, boy. Well, one of the things about slugs is they like a moist, sheltered, cool environment. So both of those plants, hosta and rhubarb, both have those big leaves. They protect the base of the plant. My suggestion is there's really nothing to work into the soil that's going to deter slugs. But you can change the environment around your plants. You can use mulch underneath your plants. That will help somewhat. That's coarse and it's a little prickly on slugs. Bodies or little tender bodies, you can eliminate, especially on hostas, you can cut off some of the lower leaves so that you get some more light and air underneath that plant. That works as well. You can put slug traps, and there's a couple things. One is a board that you lay down and the slugs will hide under that board, and the next morning pick up the board, flip it over, scrape the slugs off, throw them in the garbage, or do what you want with them. You can also put beer traps in for slugs, and you can it's basically sinking a pie pan into the soil so that the edge of the pie pan is at level, and then adding beer to that. And you want to make the beer lower so the slug actually falls into the pie pan. Don't fill it up to the top because they'll just take a little sip and go on their merry way. So you can do a couple things like that. But I really believe that with slugs, it's reducing your irrigation. And then it's also putting, raising the leaves of that plant, taking those lower leaves off so that the plant actually has a little bit more of an upright form, a vase-like form, and you allow for more light and air to get underneath there. That will also help to deter them. And then mulching, too, will help, too.
See, there's so many beers out there now. You use pale ale, or I mean, does it matter?
Use the cheap stuff.
I was going to say, cheaper the better. Here's another one. Do you recommend any houseplants I could have in my three-season porch year-round that will look attractive? Any evergreens? The temperature in the porch dips below freezing in the winter.
Ooh.
There's a problem.
Yeah, there aren't going to be any plants that will survive in the porch. But certainly in your house, Norfolk pine is a nice little evergreen that you can have. It grows, depending on the conditions. It's not a real fast grower. But some of them, I've seen my friends Vicky and Steve up in Pennington have one that's clear up to their ceiling, but it's an older plant. So you can have that. That's a great plant. Other houseplants so the question is about houseplants, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So other good houseplants, you're going to want temperate conditions. And we do have a good section on our site, on our website, about different houseplants. I love orchids. They grow in bright light. The moth orchid is relatively easy to grow. Certainly African violets are wonderful. There's a lot of good foliage plants, too. So on our site, we have a publication underneath our houseplant section. And it's called Lighting for Indoor Plants and Starting Seeds. And has information on both, but it has a couple of lists in there, one for high light plants, low light plants, and for medium light plants. So you can take a look at some of those. Of course, your flowering plants are going to be more the high light, in other words, brighter windows, southern, eastern windows. And then also you're going to have lower light plants are going to be more foliage type plants. You can also supplement with grow lights. I've got a number of them at my house. And they come in all sizes and shapes now. They're LEDs. They're efficient. And some of them will even fit right into a normal, like a floor lamp type fixture. So you can do a lot of different things with houseplants.
Yeah, that's true. I was just exchanging bulbs that I had in, what would you call them, canned lights, you know, in the ceiling. That
right.
We used for a while. Those were grow lights. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the LEDs, you're right, they're so efficient. They just basically sip electricity. So it's,
right.
It's a good deal.
Oh, that's a good description.
Sipping electricity. Our friend Gino from Gerton's taught me that. So
nice.
I have to give him credit. Here's one. This is kind of fun. The top of our Christmas tree started to sprout branches, so we cut it off and put it in water. Could they possibly grow roots? The sprouts are still green, seems to be growing about 2-inch growth right now.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if those are going to root or not, but why not try? It makes a nice cut flower type arrangement,
yeah.
Too. But, yeah, give it a shot. See what happens.
All right. Here's what this is kind of a different input on Creeping Charlie. It
Uh-oh.
Says, please ask Julie to clarify. A friend of mine said if you have chickens and they're able to roam, they will eradicate Creeping Charlie.
Oh.
Maybe we should ask Teresa.
That's a question for Teresa. I am not a chicken rancher, but I know that she has chickens. I don't know if they would or not. I'm not sure.
Well, that's something that's happened over the years, right? I mean, people here in the city have chickens.
Yeah, they have chickens. We have a lot of good poultry information, even for backyard chicken raisers or owners, on our poultry section under the livestock section in Extension. So people could take a look at that. There might be some advice there. I don't know about the Creeping Charlie, though.
Yeah.
Could be a big boom in chickens if that's the case.
Or you could say, this chicken tastes like Creeping Charlie. Okay, just a thought. Let's see here. Can you discuss dieback on the lower branches of spruce trees? Any way to prevent that?
Mm. So spruce trees have a number of what we call needle cast diseases. These are diseases that affect, they're either fungal or bacterial, they affect the lower needles, and the needles drop off. And there are a number of different diseases. Rhizosphere is probably the one most people are familiar with. It's been an issue with Colorado spruce, the blue-colored spruce, and it results from excess humidity. Colorado spruce are native to Colorado. And if you think about the conditions there, they're arid and low humidity. And the plants, when they grow in their native environment, they grow in, they're spaced out. They don't grow tightly together. So airflow is important, drying out those needles. And what we do in our landscapes is we often pack them together and grow them too close together. They're big plants. And so what happens is humidity gets trapped, the needle cast disease gets worse, and you start to see the defoliation of those branches. And it starts from the ground up, which is where you would expect it because, of course, the soil is moist, and that's a large area that humidity is held. We also have other spruce diseases, diplodia. Diploidia is one. Stigmina is another. And these are all, there's all information about how to, you know, what the characteristics are on our plant disease webpage under trees and shrubs. But if you think you have that issue, if you're seeing defoliation, there are some treatments. Again, you're going to need to contact a certified arborist for that. But you can also get them analyzed at our plant disease clinic, which is a great resource, along with our soil testing lab. But you can send a sample to our disease clinic, and they will help diagnose that for you. I think it's $45 a sample. They have instructions and are happy to talk to you about how to take a sample and send in a sufficient sample. So that's something people can consider for their high-value plants or landscape plants. The most important thing with needle cast diseases is to allow for good air circulation and to plant. If you're planting a spruce, be sure to plant it truly on center for its mature size. In other words, give it plenty of room to get to its mature size without being wedged in between a bunch of other plants or fences or buildings. So just be, you know, honest with yourself and mark that out, measure it out before you plant that shrub or that tree in your yard so that you give enough air circulation for that. Colorado spruce are not the best choice. There's lots of other plants too that give you that same blue color, like a concolor fir. There are other types of spruce that you can grow too. So, we could have a whole show on spruce diseases at this point. But, take a look at the website. It's good explanation, gives you pictures, information. Again, if you think you have a disease like that, contact a certified arborist to assess it and or send a sample to our plant disease clinic at pdc.umn.edu.
All right, Julie, we're going to take a usual bottom of the hour break to have a look at that forecast. And yes, it is going to get below zero again. So stay with us. We'll give you more details. Maybe, Julie, when we come back from the break, you can address something that we've been hearing about here on the text line about upcoming webinars or just the growing from the ground up. I've never heard of it before, and maybe you can shed some light
on
that.
Sure, happy to.
When we come back. So we're going to take a break, and if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, call it in or text it in. We have about another half hour of the show to go. 651-461-9226. Here on News Talk 830, this is WCCO. Above zero. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Denny Long here along with Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota answering your lawn and garden questions for a little less than a half hour. So if you have one, call it in or text it in at 651-461-9226. Now, yes. Julie, what was this? Was it growing or gardening from the ground up? What was that something? I never heard about this before.
Gardening from the ground up is a webinar series. It's free. It is happening February 22nd through the 25th, and the webinars go from 1 p.m. till 2:30. There's a variety of different topics that people can listen to. They're presented by our amazing local extension educators. These are people who are in our county offices, and they're super knowledgeable. They're a fantastic part of our horticulture team. And some of the topics that they're going to be talking about, and again, this is free. So you can take a late lunch at work or something and listen to these. So there's environmental factors affecting nutrient management, building a resilient garden. Whew, that's a good one. How not to kill your tree. How about that one? That sounds good. And app-free insect identification. So these are all some of the topics they'll be talking about. And I believe there's one per day. So from February 22nd through February 25th, so coming up in a little less than a month, and really great knowledge from our local extension educators. They're amazing people. They have just a wealth of knowledge and are putting on this free webinar series. This is the third year they've been doing it, so it's been very, very popular.
And again, it's called what?
It's called Gardening from the Ground Up, and people can register at this link. It is Z, as in the letter Z, like zebra, z.umn.edu/garden-up.
We will definitely mention that before you leave us today, Julie, because I know we'll get questions about that.
That'd be great.
All right, very good. Thank you, that texter, for that. I tell you what, let's grab a phone call. I think Tom is calling in from South St. Paul this very morning. Tom, good morning. You're on with Julie.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. This is a call regarding honeysuckle bushes that have become overgrown. Mm-hmm. My question is, would now be a good time to trim those, and how far should I trim them back?
So honeysuckles are, that's a great question. I'm just looking up a little bit of a list here. So honeysuckles are going to be more of a plant that prunes, that grows and blooms in the summer. So these are, it's a type of shrub you want to prune before that new growth happens. So you can go ahead and prune it in the spring coming up. So you've got till probably, late March to do this. And a lot of, because they're a real twiggy shrub, you might consider doing a type of pruning called renewal pruning. This is where you take out about a third of the largest stems. So you might look at them and say, wow, here's three big old stems. And they're really, what they do is they're blocking the light to the younger stems and making them less productive. So you want to take those out. You can take a pruning saw, or depending on, a big lopper, if you have that, depends how big the branches, and just cut it as close to the base of the plant as you can. So you got to get in there. You don't want to damage the other stems, so you just have to be careful with that. Get in there and prune out those, like a third of the largest stems. That will open up the canopy, open up the shrub, and allow for light to reach down deeper into the shrub and allow for better leafing out and then ultimately better bloom this summer. So, yeah, it's a great time to do it. You can also head back the branches if you want. You can take back if they're kind of growing out of control. If you want to shape it a little bit, you can cut back to the nearest major branch in a shrub too. And just kind of head it back, we call it, kind of bring it down so that it fits the form of the plant.
All right. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M is helping you out on Smart Garden today on CCO, either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. Here's a text. Julie, I have a Kentucky coffee tree that I planted bare root last year. The root and base of a tree have stayed vertical. The problem is that about halfway up the tree, it seems to be tilting from prevailing winds. It's in full sun. Is there a way to fix this? I just don't want the tree to get huge and tip over on my house.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think there's a way to fix it. Again, that would be a good question. You'd have to have someone like a certified arborist come in and take a look at it in person. But if it's healthy and it's kind of just growing that direction, it could be from lack of pruning as a young tree. It could be, as you said, from prevailing winds. They're actually northwest winds, which are prevailing winds in Minnesota, particularly in the winter, are pretty strong. But chances are it was more from the form of the tree as it grew. But again, that would be something a certified arborist should assess in person and let you know if there's anything to do about it.
All right. That's wise. When is a good time, listener says, to start amaryllis bulbs if you want them to bloom by Easter? The bulbs are now dormant and stored in a 50-degree room.
Mm. Awesome. Mine are too. In fact, I'm going to take mine out today. So they need probably about, if they aren't showing any growth yet, sometimes they start to pop a bud in the dark. But if they're not showing any growth yet, you're going to need about, you know, six weeks or so, I think. Sometimes they grow really fast, and sometimes they take a little while to eke out those buds. So I would take them out now, and they might not be exactly timed for Easter, but you can get pretty close. So I think Easter is it mid-April this year? I don't know if it's early or late this year, but I would take them out now. I'm going to take mine out, and I expect to have some flowers, you know, into early, you know, maybe late March or so.
All right, very good. There's another question for you, Julie. Texter says, can I prune my red-twigged dogwood significantly as they have become too tall and wide for the space?
Sure. So I just mentioned renewal pruning, which is a great yearly practice for red-twigged dogwoods. Those, as the stems get older on a red-twigged dogwood, they become kind of corky and gray. They lose their bright red color. So those are stems that every year you could look for that and take out the largest, kind of corkiest looking stems. Take them right down to the ground as close as you can. Again, be careful not to damage other stems if you can. But if your plant is overall just overgrown, you can do what's called rejuvenation pruning, in which you take the whole, you cut the whole shrub down to the ground, probably, you know, maybe 6 inches above the ground or so. And then you can also go in there at that time and take out those thicker stems too. But that's called rejuvenation pruning. These are for deciduous shrubs that have multiple stems, just like we're talking about with the dogwood, and that have been really become overgrown. So this is a way to take them down. The gentleman with the honeysuckle could do the same. So it's for these twiggy, multi-stem, cane growth habit. They're called shrubs like dogwoods and honeysuckles.
Okay. Suggestion in from a listener about the text we had about keeping slugs at bay. Pine needles work wonderfully for that.
Oh, great. And they're a beautiful mulch. If you have an excess of pine needles, they really look nice as a mulch.
Here's another one for you, Julie. Can rhubarb be grown indoors?
Boy, rhubarb needs a ton of light and a ton of sun. You would be hard-pressed to grow a good, healthy, you know, harvestable rhubarb indoors. So I would say I would not try it.
You know what we haven't talked about?
I don't say that very often.
No, you don't.
Say give it a try. But I think it would. I think the plant would end up just being weak and spindly. I would save it. You know, I would put it outside.
All right. Let's see what Lois is calling in about, calling in from the center of the Minnesota this morning. Hi, Lois. What's your question for Julie?
Hi. I have a 10-foot tall Norfolk Island pine. We bring it in the fall, put it out in the spring. Now, it's grown almost a foot high stem from the top with beautiful circle of six-inch fronds coming out. It's pushing up against the ceiling. Now, can we safely just cut that off, or what would happen?
Cut off the new stem?
Okay.
Cut off the stem.
Too tall.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. If it's a branch that's coming off the main part of the tree, I think I would feel comfortable cutting that off. But I'm not sure. You know, and maybe somebody can weigh in on this. I'm not sure with Norfolk pine if you can literally cut them back. I do not think you can. I think you will end up with a very odd-looking plant that shoots off multiple leaders off the top. But if you're just taking a stem off the side of the main stem or the main leader, I think you could do that. That's one of the drawbacks to Norfolk pine. They do get very tall as they age. They're great-looking, you know, great-looking plants, but you got to have a lot of room for them. And I hope that answers your question.
You know what, we need to take a break, but before we do, something we haven't mentioned anything about this hour, Julie, is the Arboretum. Lots to do year-round there.
Holy cow, get to the Arboretum. In February, we have the flower show. I've my office out there, and I have been watching them put these flower displays together. It's going to be amazing. I bumped into Ricky Garza, who's one of the gardeners and manages some of the tropical plants, and he had two big carts of orchids, which, as listeners know, I love orchids, so I had to stop and talk to him about that. They're going to be placed around. I mean, there's beautiful displays. They're going to have vendors out there, and that is going to be going on from February 4th through the 27th. We also have the art fair. That's the 12th through the 13th. We have full moon hikes. That's cool. February 16th, and a backup date due to weather would be the 17th. We have Harrison Sculpture Garden tours. Go out to the Sculpture Garden in the winter. It's beautiful. And we have one that's happening on Valentine's Day. So that might be a cool date night or date day. And then the Maple Fest, which is coming up in March, on March 19th, which is tapping maple trees, maple syrup, pancakes, all that good stuff. So lots of things. You can go to the arb.umn.edu. and check it out. You do need reservations, and you do need to show proof of vaccination and wear masks indoors.
Wonderful place. Great resource.
Yeah,
all right,
fantastic.
Julie.
Fantastic.
Let us take a quick break here and come right back.
Sounds
on the other
good.
Side with more of Smart Garden here on News Talk 830 WCCO. 8 above zero right now, heading for 27. Here and come right back.
Sounds
on the other
good.
Side with more of Smart Garden here on News Talk 830 WCCO. 8 above zero right now, heading for 27. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. Denny Long here with Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota, answering those lawn and garden questions. Reminder, next hour, Andy Lindis will be taking over, and we'll be talking home improvement. So keep those questions in mind. All right, Julie, let's see. Here's another one. Now that my amaryllis is done blooming, how do I take care of it to ensure that it will bloom again next year?
Oh, good question. So we had the question earlier about when to take them out of dormancy, mm-hmm. and now we're talking about it's finished blooming. So you can allow the stem to die back or prune it off, and it hopefully is putting out some leaves at this point. They're kind of big paddle-shaped leaves. They make a great indoor plant. Let it grow in a sunny window all the rest of the winter, and in the spring, when the weather is warmer, it's a tender bulb, so you want to make sure your nights are about, 50 degrees or above. And put it outside, start it out in kind of a shaded area, and then you can gradually move it into more and more sun. That allows it to acclimate to its new growing environment. And grow it outside. Make sure it's in a pot that drains well, so that when you get rain, it's draining out nicely. You don't want to rot the bulb. And it is a great way for this plant to photosynthesize all summer long with those big leaves and add more and more energy to that bulb. Then in the fall, bring it in before a freeze and put it in a dark, cool place, as our previous caller mentioned, about 50 degrees in the dark. Let everything die back, the leaves, everything. Leave it there for probably 8 to 12 weeks. Take it out, put it in a sunny window, start watering it, and you should have a nice big flower stalk come up, so a nice big bud. So that is the essentials of amaryllis. And we do have, of course, a very good web page on amaryllis that talks about replanting and repotting and all of these good details.
All right. Very good. Let's see. This listener says, my lemon cypress indoor plant was so beautiful, then I must have overwatered it. It isn't dead, but very crispy. Still green. Should I trim it back or let it grow the way it is? It looks witchy. Love the show, by the way.
It looks witchy. It's a good description.
Yeah.
I think it's probably just having a tough time growing indoors. So it may be somewhat a little bit dormant and has lost some of its needles. I would continue to water it if you want to keep it. I would continue watering it and keep it in the sunniest window you have. And then in the spring, I would get it outside as soon as the temperatures are warmer. Get it outside and keep watering it and see if it puts on new needles. And in some cases, it's hard to keep evergreens like a cypress growing well indoors. It's just very dry, and the temperatures are too warm. So then, you know, see how it goes and see if you can keep it growing.
Okay. When do you plant onion seeds, listener wants to know, inside and when to put out in the garden?
Oh, boy. I believe those need a fairly long time. It's hard. I'll be honest. It's hard to transplant onions. So I'm going out on a limb here, and I'm going to say that they should be planted in the garden, unless you have a greenhouse. So be careful while you're planting them so that they aren't planted too thickly. They're very small, and be sure to space them appropriately so you have to do as little thinning as possible with them. You can check out our A to Z vegetables on extension.umn.edu yard and garden page, and that will give you not only information on seeding onions, but also once you have seeded onions successfully, how to grow them in your garden.
I want to ask you in a minute before we leave, about that gardening from the ground up access. But here's one. It says, I have flame willows that have gotten quite large, up to 18 feet. They are very full. Would they benefit from pruning?
Yes, yes. And willows, you can go ahead and do the type of renewal pruning that I mentioned earlier, where you take out some of the larger stems. Those are beautiful willows. You can also take willows completely down to the ground and do a rejuvenation pruning as well. So either way, kind of depends on what your objectives are. I would say taking out the taller branches would be a good kind of conservative way to start. And then that would bring the size of the plant down. But in some cases with willows, they're a very twiggy bunch, and you can go ahead and cut them completely down to the ground, and they'll grow back up. So either way, depends on what your needs are.
This texture is talking about your comments about renewal pruning of honeysuckle shrubs. Does that also apply to honeysuckle vines?
I don't think so. I would not do that. I think honeysuckle vines bloom on their old stems, so you should let them remain, let the old wood remain on the stem. You can prune off any wood that happens to die, and you can certainly trim it for form, but you would want to leave that growing on your fence. I would not cut it down to the ground.
We have a couple minutes to go. What was that webinar information about growing from the ground up or gardening from the ground up?
Yes. So you can, it's on February 22nd through the 25th. These are five online webinars, and you can register at Z like zebra, z.umn.edu/garden-up. And it's a free series of webinars.
Can they, if the folks are driving, whatever, they can't get that access, that information, they of course can go back to our Odyssey app, but can they just Google that and find out, do you think?
Yes, it's called Gardening from the Ground Up.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think if you type that in and UMN, you'll find it.
You'll find it. All right. Let's grab another one or so before you leave us, Julie. It says here, if I cut a burning bush off of the ground, will it regrow? Have one that got out of control and want to start over.
Well, burning bush have more of a single stem that branches out. And so you would not take that down to the ground, but you can head it back. So heading back is removing longer parts of the branch down to where a new branch comes out of the side of it. So you can take it down in that respect, and it will prompt more growth at that grow point, so wherever you make that cut. So you can do that, but that's going to be a better way to take those out. You can also take out some of the thicker stems too, but I would not take it all the way down to the ground, I don't think. If somebody's had success with that, by all means, speak up. But the burning bush that I have seen growing have a single stem, and they have branching that comes off of that. You would not want to take that down to the ground.
Julie, we have two texts left. I think we can answer them with a yes or no, and then we got to run. I transplanted rhubarb last spring. Can I eat it this year?
You might want to give it a year to grow. It depends how robust it is and how big it was when you transplanted it.
Another yes or no answer. Are cedar trees good trees to grow?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
The deer love them.
The deer love them, yeah. They love trees around our yard, too, those critters. All right, let's get that extension website again, Julie. Great. Then we'll have to say goodbye.
extension.umn.edu and go to Yard and Garden. And please subscribe to the Yard and Garden News. We've got some awesome articles that are up there right now.
In 5 seconds, the Abiders playing anywhere?
We are not scheduled yet, but we're hoping to be soon. We'll let you
know. We'll let people know. All right. Julie, thanks so much. Always fun.
Great. Good to see you.
Julie Wisenhart from the University of Minnesota. Get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis next hour here on 830 WCCO. Currently, 8 degrees in the Twin Cities. We're heading for a high today near 27, maybe 22 tomorrow. Stay with us.
What if everything you learn in history class was only half the story? I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets mysterious. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, paranormal phenomena, and events that science still can't fully explain. On Hidden History, I treat these moments like open case files. Not myths, not superstition, just incomplete explanations waiting for a closer look. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.